All right. Hello and welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today we have a great show for you today. We have Lisa Calderon, candidate for the 57th Assembly District, joining us. Lisa, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's going, you know, as good as can be expected. But, you know, everybody's healthy and I'm grateful for that.
Yep, that's all that matters. I was wondering, Lisa, if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, the district you're running in and kind of, you know, what kind of your race is looking like right now.
Sure. So it's the 57th Assembly District. It's a working class district, suburb of Los Angeles. You know, we have a lot of working families. It's a great community. I've lived here for 30 years. And the race right now, I mean, I feel like it's looking good. I'm optimistic and hopeful. You know, I do have a Republican challenger who is a councilwoman in the city of Whittier. And she's a very strong Trump Republican. She's also a Latina. So I never take anything for granted. Right. So I'm just trying to finish strong and, you know, make it to across the finish line on November 3rd. So I feel good, though, about the way things are going.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, interesting times. Usually candidates are spending a lot of time, you know, meeting people in person, going door to door, having events and things like that, you know, really getting out in the community. Kind of, I guess, how has COVID-19, I guess, affected your ability to kind of, you know, get people, you know, to meet people and, I guess, touch your community?
Well, the pandemic's definitely had an impact. I mean, I feel fortunate that in the primary, I was able to get out in the community and meet people and engage constituents. Unfortunately, now with COVID-19, it's much more difficult. I think retail politics, as we know it, you know, it's not possible to go out and engage voters at events in the community. So, I think our campaign did a good job of pivoting to virtual campaigning in terms of, you know, Zoom meetings and hosting community meetings online and engaging voters that way. So I think we're all trying to figure this out, and we adapted pretty quickly.
How's that working for you? How's kind of the digital kind of meet and greets and digital Zoom kind of meetings working for you? You know, in some districts, you know, a lot of people are maybe more high tech, but I guess in your district, is it having as much impact?
So, you know, I think that I find that constituents are more engaged online. I think you have, you know, whereas before when you would host an event living in Southern California, it's very difficult to get from one place to another because of traffic. So I think it provides another opportunity for people to just open their laptop and join an event and get to know you that way. It's not ideal, but it seems like it's kind of the only way that we can do things right now. You know, we're just figuring it out as we go along. So it's working for me for now.
You know, you probably have one of the more unique backgrounds of a candidate, you know, in your history here in Sacramento. Can you give us, you know, our listeners kind of a your history in Sacramento and, you know, kind of when you started first working around the Capitol?
Yeah, so I'm the daughter of farm workers, and I went to Sac State and got a business degree, but then I went to work for Speaker Willie Brown after I graduated, and I actually worked in his Los Angeles office the entire time I worked for him. So that being said, it was a great opportunity for me to engage with constituents. You know, I got to organize against Prop 187 and help elect Democrats up and down the state. And so I have a staffer's perspective. I also think I happened to marry somebody that was in public office, right, coincidentally. And then I have a son who is a member who's retiring. So I think just having that background of working with legislators, working with Third House, working with community-based organizations, you know, it gives me a different perspective, and I appreciate that experience, especially now. But I'm also a woman too, so I think that's just an added value and what I bring to the table. So very grateful for everything that I had the opportunity to experience, though, working as a staffer.
Yeah, kind of like the different perspectives, staffer, spouse, mother, kind of, I guess, you know, the past, you know, 20, 30 years that, you know, you've had family members in office or, kind of, I guess, are you, how do you expect, you know, being a member yourself will be different than kind of watching what your spouse or your son has experienced?
Well, you know, I think just my life experience, you know, growing up from humble beginnings, and I've been working for Edison for 24 years. I'm a political compliance advisor, and I manage their federal and state PAC. And, you know, I think being a mom influences my decisions too. I'm very task oriented. So, you know, I think when I see people in the community that are hurting or have issues, you know, my first instinct is to help. You know, in terms of my family, I'm very proud of the work that my husband and my son have done in the legislature. And I look forward to working on those same issues. But, you know, I think the pandemic has also created new opportunities to help working families in the district. So, you know, it's I bring my own perspective, and we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, 2020 is definitely kind of a weird year. You know, everyone's legislative priorities were kind of shrunk down to focus on COVID or, you know, wildfires or housing. Okay. Kind of coming into 2021, kind of what are your, you know, priorities you're going to be looking at?
Well, I think hopefully, you know, get elected on November 3rd, and then being a new member, you know, kind of getting my sea legs and you know, learning the rules. I have so much respect for the institution and the legislature. And I think it's also important to understand the rules if you're going to be in that role. And also focusing on COVID relief. I think that's going to be a big challenge for anybody in that role. And so, you know, I think that's kind of top of mind right now.
Are there any, I guess, particular subject areas that you think you're going to be keen on? You know, your work in Edison, you know, are you going to be more drawn to energy issues? Or is there any, I guess, particular issues that you think you're going to be focused on committee?
So, you know, it's interesting because I'm still focused on the same issues, you know, in this district, you know, access to health care, good paying jobs was an issue before COVID, even more so now with the pandemic, universal preschool. A lot of parents have a hard time finding preschool, or they can't afford it, and it would help parents be able to work and also give children a plan, the opportunity to start at the same place. Wildfire mitigation is something that I'm really interested in. You can't work for a utility for 24 years and not be interested in that. As you've seen, we've had a pretty robust fire season so far, you know, and long-term care is something I'm always also very interested in, and homeless. We have a big homeless problem in the district, not just here, but it's something that's even compounded now with COVID.
Right. You know, wildfires is a great topic right now, since, you know, we're all just, the smoke's just clearing out. The fires are still raging in some areas. And, you know, as you just said, working for a utility, that's something, you know, you guys are very sensitive to with reverse, what is it, incumbination and other aspects you guys have to look out for. Kind of, what are some of your thoughts of how we could start, you know, solving some of these wildfire and energy issues?
Well, you know, I think public safety is always first and foremost, right? I think from a constituent's perspective, from an employee of a utility, it's keeping the public safe and our employees. You know, I think that we've made some good progress in the past few years. I know that my company has been doing a lot of work on wildfire mitigation, and I think we just need to continue to explore, you know, new ways to, you know, prevent wildfires. I know my company's been doing that. I think it's going to be a challenge with climate change. As you can see, I think I read that 10 of the biggest fires that we've ever had in California have happened in the last 5 years. So, you know, getting our communities to take action and, you know, look at their properties to make sure that if you do live in a wildfire area, you're keeping everything cut, you're doing what you can, you're doing your part, but also, you know, working with the utilities, and they're doing a lot of work to also take those preventive measures. So we just need to keep on this path of wildfire mitigation.
You know, we've had kind of a bizarro year this year, and kind of one of the things that happened that hasn't happened in a long time are these rolling blackouts. And some people are kind of questioning, you know, is this part of our green energy focus that now we're having these blackouts, we don't have enough power. Kind of, I guess, in your experience, you know, how is the best way to solve, I guess, these blackout problems coming in the future and, you know, keeping our, you know, I guess, power reliable?
Yeah, that's a very complex question. But I think that we need to keep looking for renewable energy sources, right? But let's say, for example, if you live in an area where it's foggy, maybe the solar doesn't come online, right? Because there's no sun. So
right.
I think we just have to find ways to keep, you know, different sources of energies available for when we have high load demands, right? Because I can tell you, you know, energy companies don't like to be in a situation like we were in a few weeks ago, right? Keeping the lights on, that's our business, and doing it safely is important. So we just need to make sure we have enough generation sources and work towards our renewable goal, you know, but be thoughtful about that given the demand.
Right. You know, I guess, you know, kind of, I guess your election crunch time's coming, you know, you're 40 some days out. I guess, how are you planning on spending your next, you know, 40 days and campaigning in your district?
So I think for the next 40 days, it's going to be a lot of Zoom meetings, which seems to be the preferable way of meeting people and engaging voters, food drives, and, you know, those community events that are safe for public to attend, like drive-through type events and just, you know, online, do virtual phone banking and walk and drops, because, you know, right now with COVID, we're not walking precincts because, you know, it's not safe. We don't want to force people to engage at the door, but we still definitely want them to know that we care about them. And, you know, I really would love to have their support. So just finding the right balance of those things to finish strong.
Yeah, I guess what aspect are, you know, going door to door, you know, do you have teams, you know, kind of, you know, getting out the vote? You know, I guess, how are you guys working that angle this year?
So I think there's going to be a lot of virtual phone banking too, which you know, helps you reach more voters quicker than you can going door to door. But there'll also be GOTV door drops and knocking on doors and leaving information. So it's just finding that right mix. I also think, you know, it's a big election year. So I think voters are going to be paying more attention. So I think that that's a favorable thing. And I think that helps me.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess how is the mood, I guess, amongst voters when you're reaching out to them out there in 2020? You know, so much going on, such a, you know, a big race going on back east. You know, I guess, you know, how are these people's moods when you're going door to door?
Well, I think people are really concerned. I mean, I think they're getting a lot of disinformation, right? Probably from, you know, our president. You know, they're fearful when they hear that they're carting off mailboxes. And I can't tell you how many people I've had reach out to me. These are just like citizens that I've met through Zoom, or maybe I've met in the community, you know, before the shutdown, saying, what can I do to help get ballots to the registrar? Can I volunteer to pick up ballots? So I think people are feeling kind of a sense of wanting to be engaged and to help protect our democracy. And so for me, that's really, it's wonderful to see that so many people are excited. What I don't like to see is that people, when they're fearful about the uncertainty, you know, based on disinformation.
Right. You know, having, I guess, you know, been married to a legislature, you know, worked around the legislature, did you ever see yourself, you know, 20, 15, 30 years ago, thinking that you would one day be a member yourself?
So that's a good question. So I'd always thought I wanted to end my career running for office. And I say that end my career because I was busy being a mom. You know, I have three boys, and my husband was pretty busy. And, you know, I was blessed to have a good job with Edison. But I think once you work in politics, it always pulls you back in. You know, in 2016, I was a delegate for Hillary, which was a great experience. And I was fortunate to be the Democratic Party's Woman of the Year for this assembly district in 2009. So I kept active, just thinking that, you know, at some point in time, there'll be a point in my life when I can do more and give back. And it just came sooner than later because, as you know, my son decided to retire. And so I had to think long and hard about, is this the time? Do I want to run now? And, you know, for me, I thought it's really important because I love this community and I've been engaged with the constituents, they're my family, my friends. And so it was important enough for me to decide that this was the right time.
You know, I guess of your other three sons, do they have any political interests or have they shown any interest in wanting to run and kind of keep the family name going?
Well, so I have a 16-year-old son, all boys, and he just co-founded a Democratic club at his school because it's a 150-year-old school, but they've always had a young conservative club, but they never had a Democratic club. So I think, you know, he watched his brother and he's so proud of him, obviously. He's a role model for my son. So he definitely has that interest. I think, you know, he's thinking right now he'll go to law school first and then see what happens. But, you know, he was eighth grade president and, you know, he's got the disease.
Right. And I guess how is he doing, doing the distance learning and kind of going through high school and not being able to, I guess, kind of experience the whole high school experience?
Yeah, you know, I'm very fortunate because he's pretty mature. I kind of think he's like an old soul, and he understands why, you know, we were in quarantine and why we have to social distance, and he does miss his friends. I think he's doing fine. He's adapted. You know, I always remind him that, you know, there's always other kids that have it a lot harder than you, and he appreciates that and understands that. I mean, he doesn't have to deal with food insecurity or housing insecurity or, you know, no access to internet. So he's got a pretty good perspective on how fortunate he is, and he's self-motivated. So I think he's doing okay, although he does miss his friends, obviously.
Yeah. And so I guess you have one more son who's a little bit older then too?
Yeah. So I have, so Ian is my stepson and then Matt is my other stepson, and he's not in politics at all. He's an entrepreneur and, you know, he's a businessman and he's happy that way. He doesn't have the bug. So I think we're good. Just have to get through the youngest.
You know, I thought it was funny when I asked you, you know, kind of what you're planning on to do next year. And, you know, you mentioned learn the rules. And I remember when Chuck was up here, you know, he was one of the best parliamentarians I've ever seen knowing the rules. Has he started having study sessions with you on learning these rules?
Well, we haven't had study sessions yet, but I think he's a great resource for me. And thank you for saying that about him. That's very kind of you. But I do value his advice because I think he had a great career, and I think he, obviously, I think he's, you know, intelligent, and but he did a good job of balancing things, and he was able to be successful at getting a lot accomplished. And so I'll definitely be asking him. I might reach out to Dotson Wilson to have a conversation. He actually hired me when I worked for Speaker Brown.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm really sad that he retired, but I know he's still out there and he'll probably be happy to talk to me.
Yeah, he's on the FPPC now, so.
I know. It'll be an unofficial, you know, call.
Not too far away. You know, it's really interesting that, you know, you said that you work in the, I guess, the Speaker's LA office. You know, him being from San Francisco, I had no idea that he had actually had regional offices up and down the state. So that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, he did. And I, you know, it was a busy office too. We got a lot of constituents and, you know, we helped everybody who walked through the door, but it was a great place for a young professional to get her sea legs and understand what legislators do and how you can serve the community. And so I'm very fortunate to have had that experience.
Definitely. Well, Lisa, I know you're busy and you got to go. I guess, is there any lasting and parting wisdom you have for our listeners out there?
Well, I don't know about lasting wisdom, but let me just say this has been a great experience. You know, I know that being a legislator, it's a very difficult job from what I've seen. And so I don't take it lightly, but I'm really excited, you know, for November 3rd and looking forward to getting elected and serving. I think it's going to be a little bit different than my husband or Ian's experience, but that's okay. And I'm very hopeful. And thank you for having me on. This was fun.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. And if our listeners want to kind of get more information on you or your campaign, I guess what's the best place to look?
So my website is lisacaldroneforassembly.com.
Okay. And are you on any social media, Lisa?
I am. I'm on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Okay.
So, and they're different handles.
All right. Well, we'll find them.
Top of my head.
We'll add them. But
okay.
Thank you so much for having us, and good luck on the election, and look forward to the results on November 4th.
Thank you so much, Jared. You take care and stay safe.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sactown Talks. Make sure to like and subscribe to the YouTube page, hit that notification bell, or rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks to our producers, Phil and the dapperly dressed Vernon, and we'll be back to you on Friday.
Some are called dreamers. Wow.